Second reading today is 2 Chronicles chapter 3. Second Chronicles chapter 3, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. Then Solomon began to build the house of the Lord at Jerusalem in Mount Moriah, where the Lord appeared unto David his father in the place that David had prepared the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. And he began to build in the second month, in the second day of the second month, in the fourth year of his reign. Now, these are the things wherein Solomon was instructed for the building of the house of God. The length by cubits after the first measure was 80 cubits, and the breadth 20 cubits. And the porch that was in the front of the house, the length of it was, according to the breadth of the house, 20 cubits, and the height was 120, and he overlaid it with pure gold. And the greater house he sealed with fir tree, which he overlaid with fine gold, and set thereon palm trees and chains. And he garnished the house with precious stones for beauty, and the gold was gold of Parvaim. He overlaid also the house, the beams, the posts, and the walls thereof, and the doors thereof with gold, engraved cherubim on the walls. And he made the most holy house, the length whereof was according to the breadth of the house, 20 cubits, and the breadth thereof, 20 cubits, and he overlaid it with fine gold, amounting to 600 talents. And the weight of the nails was 50 shekels of gold. And he overlaid the upper chambers with gold. And in the most holy house, he made 2 cherubims of image work and overlaid them with gold. And the wings of the cherubims were 20 cubits long. One wing of the one cherub was 5 cubits, reaching to the wall of the house. And the other wing was likewise 5 cubits, reaching to the wing of the other cherub. And one wing of the other cherub was 5 cubits, reaching to the wall of the house. And the other wing was 5 cubits also, joining to the wing of the other cherub. The wings of these cherubims spread themselves forth 20 cubits, and they stood on their feet, and their faces were inward. And he made the veil of blue and purple and crimson and fine linen, and wrought cherubims thereon. Also he made before the house 2 pillars of 35 cubits high, and the chapiter that was on the top of each of them was 5 cubits. And he made chains, as in the oracle, and put them on the heads of the pillars, and made 100 pomegranates, and put them on the chains. And he reared up the pillars before the temple, one on the right hand and the other on the left, and called the name of that on the right hand Jachin, and the name of that on the left, Boaz. May God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his most holy word. So as we come to this chapter then, we see that we are now putting into place what was planned in the last chapter. Solomon prepared in the last chapter. He got all of the materials and the artisans he needed. And now here he begins to build. In the place of building, there is a remembrance of the place. This is the place after David had numbered the people and his heart struck him after that he had done so. The Lord came to him in Nathan the prophet and said to him, ask 3 things, and shall you fall under the hand of your enemies, under the hand of your disease, or in the hand of the Lord? And David said, I'll fall into the hand of the Lord. And it was at the threshing floor of Ornan that the Lord was appeased. There David bought from Ornan that yoke of oxen and also all of the boards, the carts for the fire for the burnt sacrifice, and he offered that offering there, and that's where the plague was stayed. It is in that same place on Mount Moriah. This place has quite a history. We will also remember that it was upon Mount Moriah that Abraham learned that God will provide himself a ram for the burnt sacrifice. So it's a very historic place. It's the place where the Lord had chosen to set his name. It is the place where he had set his name a number of times already. It is the place where he met Moses, where he said, I am that I am. All right, so the man of building, then we've seen the place of building. Now we have the man of building. And this is a way of seeing the typology of Solomon and David as both referring to Christ. David in that he is the covenant king par excellence, and Solomon in that he is the builder of God's house. It was promised to David that the Lord would build him a house, sure and stable, based upon his promises. And further, it was also promised to David that the fruit of his loins would build this house. This was true not only of Solomon and of the temple, but of Christ and the church, as we heard last hour. All right, so he began to build in the second day of the second month in the fourth year of his reign. Notice that Solomon doesn't wait long. This will be interesting when we come to our sermon today. And so he is building, and we see, let's make use of at least a few of these details. We see that while the tabernacle itself, when it was put up, was 20 cubits by 10 cubits. This one is 60 cubits by 20 cubits. And that the Holy of Holies, whereas before it was 10 cubits by 10 cubits, now it's 20 cubits by 20 cubits. And this presents something I think that is very important for us to recognize, and that is that the program that God has for his church is not a contracting program, but an expanding program. That we can expect the church to grow, that we can expect the gospel to triumph, that we can expect the people of God to advance, that we can expect the knowledge of God to go from zero to covering the face of the earth like the waters cover the face of the deep. We can expect that. We may also admit that even in those times of expansion, that general trending of expansion will meet with times of contraction and declension. And we need not worry about that. Those two are in the power and purpose and purview of God. We see that the cherubim are no longer built into the top of the ark. Now they are standing structures in themselves, and they stand along the back wall. As the high priest entered into the Holy of Holies, the first thing that he saw, or maybe the most looming thing that he saw, were the two cherubim. That back wall was 20 cubits. So we have, children, you'll know this math problem. What is 20 divided by 4? The answer is 5. Why 5? And why is that an important answer? Because there were 4 wings on those cherubim, right? And so each one was 5 cubits. And so they each reached to the outside of the wall and then to the other side of that cherub, to the wing of the cherub that was on the other side of the wall. And so as the high priest looked in, he would see cherubs with their wings, their outside wings touching their wall, and then the inside wings touching each other. That's what he saw. And then he saw their faces, and their faces, it says, they were turned inward. Why inward? They were turned inward so they could behold the top, the caporet, the top of the box, as we said earlier, because that is where the blood was sprinkled, which prefigured the blood of Christ, which things angels desire to look into, because there is no atonement for angels. Angels look on. Angels are ministering spirits sent to those who are inheriting salvation. And so they are those that are that rejoice that the Lord would take corrupted sinners and devise a means to bring them into his presence, who is of purer eyes than to behold iniquity. We know what those angels do in his presence. They cover their face, they cover their feet, and they will not land on the same platform in which he is. And yet, they also give up that joy, don't they? They give up that joy to those who are inheriting salvation. So the faces of those two cherubim looked inward. And by inward, I don't think that it means that they looked at one another. They looked at the box. They looked at the top of that lid so that they might see where Christ was prefigured to atone for the sins of his people every Yom Kippur. Okay, and then the other thing that we see here is the ornateness of it, the cherubs of it. And I will say that having now been through and taught a course in biblical theology in our seminary studies, that there is a lot of fanciful stuff that surrounds the building of the temple. I think it's fanciful. Some will see here, oh, well, this is like Eden, you know. Why is it like Eden? Because it has trees in it, like Eden did. It has cherubim, like Eden did. Well, Eden didn't have cherubim inside. Eden had cherubim outside. You see, just the presence of cherubim, we just need to be more discerning than that. We need not to draw lines of parallelism where parallelism doesn't really exist. However, what we can say for certain about the temple that Solomon built is that it was overlaid with gold everywhere. It was to show its richness and the glory of God. What did Solomon say? Let's think of that instead. Solomon said, "The temple that I am building must stand as the place and dwelling of the Most High God who is above all gods." And so in that way, it must be ornate. In that way, it must be opulent. In that way, it must attract the attention of all. And so it was a wonderful piece of artwork in its own right. But it was an artwork that was built at the direction of God himself. Its size, its proportion, its building materials. All these things, said David, the Lord pressed upon me by his spirit. So this is not just some artist's conception of heaven or Eden or anything like it. This is the place where God chose to cause his name to dwell. The only other thing that we can speak of here particularly is the two pillars on the outside. And they were tall. They were tall pillars, towering pillars. What does it say that they were? Let's see, how tall were they? 30 and 5 cubits high. Two pillars of 30 and 5 cubits high. If we saw a pillar that was 35 feet high, we would say, whoa. But this is 35 cubits high, which is nearly 70 feet. Short of 70 feet, maybe 62, 63 feet tall. And then on the top of those pillars, chapiters, another 5 cubits with pomegranates and chains. Pomegranates, obviously speaking of the fruitfulness of God toward his people. Chains, speaking of how that that ornament of fruitfulness was laid upon and bound upon God's people. That they were bound to be fruitful because God ministered to them and for them through Christ. The names of those two pillars, the one was Yakin or Jakin. Yakin is literally the Hebrew, and it means he will establish. That's what Yakin means. Well, that's what a pillar does, isn't it? What will the Apostle Paul call the church? The pillar and ground of the truth. What does Boaz mean? It means strength. Is not the strength of a pillar, the grounding upon it. So I take a look at these two columns here, and I think the Apostle Paul has that in mind when he says that the church of our day is the pillar and ground of the truth. That is, that she holds up and holds out to the world the very gospel of Christ. So did that temple of old. Yes, in a more ornate way. Yes, in a more earthly way. We today, with more spiritual glory, hold out that same gospel to the rest of the world. With that then, let's stand and continue.